You're listening to The Impromptu on the Hologram Radio Network, a multifaceted show discussing how technology, art, design, and equality converge on topics that matter most to us. From gaming culture to film and other forms of media, we examine the creative process and how the decisions we make shape our perceptions and lives. I'm Alex Knight, and I am joined by Michael Norton, as always, Chief Creative Officer. Oh, have you utterly melted from the heat, Michael?
Almost. Trying to keep cool, but it's 32 outside, which to some may be, oh, that's no big deal, but this is Vancouver. We're used to cold and rain all the time.
Indeed. Well, speaking of cool, what were you saying about the Apple car? Because it sounded like there's something going on that's interesting.
Yeah. So there were some photos today of a van marked Apple Maps that had some kind of sensor apparatus all over it, including, extremely suspiciously, a sensor on one of the back wheels that seemingly mirrors a sensor that was on the initial version of Google's self-driving car prototype.
Well, that is very intriguing.
Yes. So
what does it mean?
Well, of course, it means that Apple is working on self-driving car technology, as they should be. I've always maintained that their plan probably is to bolster their services with some sort of shared fleet of Apple cars. It won't just be that you can buy an Apple car. They will actually start deploying fleets of them that drive themselves that you can access with a subscription fee.
Mm. Like you're thinking like working with local cities to have some kind of ride sharing program or something?
It would be an internal Apple service. So you would access it through iCloud, through iOS. You would just like open the app and it would be kind of like Uber, except Apple. And I don't know, some cutesy icon that's like a steering wheel in the shape of the Apple logo, or I don't know.
Got it. Okay.
So you open that and then you would have the ability to summon a car to your location, at which point an Apple car would drive itself to wherever you are. You get in and it takes you wherever you want to go. And no doubt they would have different tiers, like maybe the cheapest tier is you can only go so many kilometers a month, something like that. And then with the base plan, maybe you have the option to go on road trips for a one-time fee or like per kilometer. I don't know. I don't know how they'd price it, but ultimately, I think the end game here is to create a service whereby people have access to cars whenever they want. And I think I said this in a previous episode where we kind of blue skied the idea. But I think based on the timeline, based on the fact that the Apple car won't be ready until 2020 at the earliest, I think it's not outside the realm of possibility to imagine that instead of selling an actual car, they're really going to be selling the service that comes with those cars. And they're going to just start building them and deploying them. Probably San Francisco to start, because of course, but also probably every other major city. So I would expect them to launch in, say, San Francisco, Sydney, London, Paris.
Yeah, those sort of big, well-known metropolitan cities.
Yeah. So I would almost certainly bet that they'll partner with Uber or their Chinese counterpart, whose name I will probably butcher.
It's okay. Make an effort.
Didi Chuxing. Apple is actually an investor in Didi in China. Their CEO is a bit of a visionary. She's self-made. She got her start as a young child, and she basically built this business from nothing. There was a really good interview with her in Fast Company a while ago. And this was just before or just after Tim Cook had met with her to talk about a partnership with them and Apple. So I think I see Apple building the hardware for this, and they provide the service layer as well, because they can bake it into every iPhone and every Apple Watch and every iPad and every Mac, so that you can call a car from wherever you are, whatever device you're on. And then, depending what car arrives, I could see it being like, there's the Apple fleet, but then there's also a Didi owned fleet or an Uber owned fleet. So they control their own Apple cars, and whoever picks you up, they get the bulk of the transaction, or they each operate independently and the subscription gets shared between all three, or I don't know how it would work, but
yeah, it sounds great. And it's certainly within Apple's capability to do this. But my concern is that, like with Uber, is getting some kind of approval. I mean, I would imagine there's going to be some lengthy process, licensing, paperwork,
yeah,
trying to get buy-in from the cities to, like, Vancouver. I can see us not getting that for, like, years because...
Oh, yeah, the taxi lobbies will be firmly...
It's going to be the same situation...
Firmly against this.
Again, with Uber and with Apple. It's that effectively that is going to disrupt the taxi industry, and
It'll utterly destroy the taxi industry because...
So what are these taxi drivers are going to do for jobs? That kind of sucks for them.
Well, yeah, of course it does.
I mean, I have some sympathy for people. I mean, no one likes to lose their jobs, and I don't like hearing people lose their jobs. But of course, the taxi industry in general is kind of crappy.
Yeah,
I mean,
of course.
It's overpriced. The service is crappy. You get creepy taxi drivers asking you invasive personal questions about your life that they have no business asking. Even worse for women too.
Well, that's why Uber does so well, because they actually tell their drivers not to talk to customers. That's why people like it, because if you're ordering a car, you just want to get somewhere. You're late for a meeting, you got out of the club, whatever, you just want to get home. You're not interested in having a lengthy conversation with a stranger. So
yeah, and it's not that you're trying to purposely be rude. It's just that sometimes maybe you just have one of those days where you just have so much going on. There's so much on your mind. And yeah, you know what? Striking up a conversation with someone while you're trying to get somewhere important maybe might not be the first thing on your list.
Yeah, exactly. And to Uber's credit, they kind of foresaw that. Unfortunately, their competition wasn't so prophetic. Lyft, who encourages their drivers to have conversations with people, is actually on the verge of bankruptcy and is attempting to sell itself. They've approached Apple, Didi, Uber, GM, and nobody has actually sealed the deal.
Why wouldn't Uber swallow Lyft up?
Because they don't need them. Uber is killing them in terms of competition.
I've never used either, so I don't know what service is better, but is there any merit to using Lyft over Uber?
Lyft is cheaper. That's about
it. So they got price on Uber, but that's about it.
Yeah. And like I said, their drivers are encouraged to talk to customers. And not everyone likes that, so that's why Uber's winning. And I would say Uber has a better technology stack. They've been at it longer. They have access to more data than Lyft does. They really get a sense of when people need transportation and how many people want transportation. Like, they have access to demographic data and all of that stuff from their customers. And it's a way bigger user base than Lyft has ever had. So I don't think they really need to buy Lyft, because they're doing just fine on their own. The only reason I think they would buy them is if Lyft had some particular thing that they wanted, or if they wanted some of their employees. But
I think
for that, it would just be easier to wait for Lyft to explode.
Right.
And then poach those employees or poach them before the company explodes. Like, they don't need to buy the whole company for a few people.
I was just going to pose the question while you were talking. I was just thinking about this, but I think I answered my own question. I was going to pose the question of, well, you know, going into creating this Lyft business, you would think that knowing that Uber was already established, that in this really
well
innovative space, that they like creating the exact same product, basically, that's so risky when your only advantage is price. You're only competing on price.
Well,
I mean,
that
can be a good thing, but I mean,
right. So the history of these two services, they actually came out around the same time. It wasn't an after-the-fact sort of thing.
Oh, I see. Okay.
They were within like a month or two of each other. And basically, Uber just shot out of the gate. They were doing everything right. They had the black cars, and it was all very premium and professional. Lyft had sort of gone for a more friendly approach with the big pink mustaches on the cars and everything. It was like apples and oranges, and people ended up preferring the apples more. So, I mean, that's kind of how that
so
happened.
I guess the long and the short of it is that Lyft might not be around for too much longer.
No, they likely won't be. They have about $1 billion left in the cash fund, and then they're done.
Okay, so let's just pose this scenario. Say Apple does exactly what you're saying with the Apple Car. They're going to have this subscription service. People kind of, you know, get a ride in one of these cars. They're obviously going to be going up. That's direct competition for Uber. What does that mean for Uber, and how do you think that that would affect Uber? I mean,
I don't think it would affect Uber per se, because the thing is, if all the Apple cars are engaged, then you're going to use Uber.
What do you mean if all the Apple cars are engaged?
Apple is only going to have so many cars
right
on the road at one time, and people might be in all of them.
Ah, got it.
So,
got it. Right, because of course, Uber, anyone could be an Uber driver.
Right.
You could be driving your Camry and be an Uber driver.
In this likely future, there are just X number of Uber self-driving vehicles on the road, and X number of them are currently not being used.
Are you saying they have self-driving cars now, or that
they're actually going to start deploying their first self-driving cars in a few weeks?
I never understood the difference between, because there's like Uber and then Uber X, right? They have a couple of different platforms.
So,
what is that?
That's basically the level of service. So Uber X is like an SUV for more than a few people.
Oh, okay.
That kind of thing. Then there's Uber Black, which is actually, I think Uber Black is, no, Uber Black's like the town car. Uber X is their cheap one. Uber X is for drivers that have just any car.
Sure.
Then there's Uber Black, which is the town car that everybody's used to, which costs more. Then there's a step up from that that's like a van. So if you've got like seven people, you use that one and you can all go to the party. There's also Uber Cab, which is cab drivers that are using Uber. And that's even cheaper than Uber X, I think. Yeah, they've like introduced a few levels since I stopped using it. Then they've got various other ventures. There's that Uber food delivery one, and a few other things. Obviously, it's not here, so we can't take advantage of any of it. But yeah, like in this imagined future, everybody has their own fleet of self-driving vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
And if there isn't an Apple one available, there might be an Uber one available. There might be some other companies available. The cab company could have some available. Like, this is the thing. Just because drivers are being phased out, that doesn't mean that the cab companies will go under. On the contrary, the cab companies can actually just buy a bunch of self-driving cars and maintain their own version of the system.
I didn't think about
that. Or buy into the system. Like, I'm imagining that everybody kind of ties into Apple's framework, and then it's just whatever car happens to be available gets the fare. So, like, if Apple gets it, it goes to your subscription. Or if it's an Uber one, it goes to Uber. Or if it's a cab one, it goes to the cab company. 'Cause a unified infrastructure would make it easier for everybody. Because if you have just one app that's preloaded on the iPhone, anybody can use it, and anybody can become a customer for any of these companies with the tap of a button. So I think that would be very lucrative for everybody.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
If Apple provided that and if they bought into it. Otherwise, they'd have to make their own app and people would have to install it and et cetera. But regardless of what happens, ultimately, the future we're looking at is that basically there will be these fleets of roving self-driving vehicles. Some of them might be parked in random places like Car2Go, that kind of thing. But most of them will be driving constantly, occasionally stopping to recharge themselves. And whenever somebody wants one, they just call one, it goes to them, they get in, they go where they want. And people basically don't own cars anymore at that point.
Yeah, it's interesting because I always hear the same thing from people at Apple, like specifically Tim Cook, where you know how he always says, like it's like their catchphrase, we'd like to build products that enrich people's lives. And yeah. I'm just thinking, what will this service do to really enrich people's lives? Like what is it about that experience that is going to be so much better than what everybody else is doing? Is it just the self-driving car? Is it something else that's going to be in the car that you experience on your way somewhere?
I think ultimately the design of the car is going to lend itself to that self-driving experience. It's going to be a car that doesn't have a driver's seat. It's going to be a car that's geared towards commuting, towards people that are going from A to B. So my idea of a possible configuration is that the seats all face inward and there's like a table or something with
interesting
charging ports for your phone, that kind of thing.
Free Wi-Fi.
Yeah. I mean, the cars will probably have built-in LTE or 5G at that point. So Yeah, like you get in the car, you're sitting, you're comfy, you're not focusing on driving, you're just enjoying the experience of getting to where you're going.
Sure.
Like sitting on the bus.
Sure, they'll have built-in iPads or something, you can watch movies.
Yeah, I mean, the whole table could be a touch screen, who knows? Sure. And then obviously, I would imagine that the windshield will be some kind of wraparound display that has like a transparent HUD, that kind of thing. Yeah, I mean, that's one possible configuration. They could have thought of something else really neat. I don't know.
No, it sounds good. It sounds like, based on what you're saying, it sounds like it would be a real nice, like, thing to be in.
Well, yeah, like, it would basically be, like, sitting in a moving living room.
Yeah.
Like, it's no longer about driving. It's about enjoying the journey.
Right.
Because you don't have to focus on actually getting there.
There's a big difference between, I'm sure, being in that, like, you know, nicely designed self-driving Apple car versus some dude showing up in his, like, you know, 15-year-old Civic, you know, that where he hasn't had an oil change in a long time and it smells.
Exactly. So, I mean, the way it enriches people's lives is people don't have to worry about driving anymore. They don't have to worry about taking public transit anymore.
But there is, for the first, I think, a few years into self-driving cars, there's going to be a lot of people that are going to get in them and try them, but they're still going to feel uncomfortable about, like, oh, is it going to crash at any moment?
Yeah,
is it going to make a mistake? I'll feel that way. I will not trust it 100%.
It's going to be painful, but ultimately everybody needs to switch over because that's the only way it'll be 100%
safe.
Well,
I think we will get over it. It's just a matter of acclimating to just being in a car that you don't control, which is hard because we've been trained for so long since the invention of the car that it needs a pilot.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I mean, this is the lie we tell ourselves.
Right. Well, although how many times have you been in a car with a friend or something where you're like, I really wish I wasn't in here because I don't trust this person's driving. So that happens too.
It can, but I mean, anyone that takes public transit, like the SkyTrain is automated. Buses, you're not driving a bus. You're at the mercy of the bus driver.
I still don't understand why buses don't have seatbelts. That really is insane to me.
Yeah, it is a bit crazy. But, I mean, there's a lot of experiences where you're not really in control of the vehicle. And planes, like, a lot of the time, planes now are so automated that pilots really just do takeoffs and landings.
Yeah, well,
everything
that's true.
Else
they do
is
have,
automated.
Yeah, they do have an autopilot mode for sure.
And now they're starting to automate the takeoffs and landings as well.
What?
Yeah.
A commercial airlines?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
So, I mean,
news to
we,
me.
We are already on the verge of no longer needing airplane pilots.
Wow.
So, this technology is coming. Like, it's already here in stages, and it's so much safer because humans are fallible, right?
Yeah.
People make mistakes. People fall asleep at the wheel. People get drunk and swerve into a tree or run somebody over at a crosswalk or a million other different things. So
even with planes too, pilots make errors.
Yeah.
They make judgment calls that are wrong.
Yeah, exactly. So by taking humans out of that system, you are increasing safety exponentially because you are removing the ability for randomness to happen. If every car is self-driving, they can all talk to each other and avoid each other. And everything they do will be extremely predictable because they're following pathways and guidelines.
That's the other thing I didn't think about, because in a possible future where all cars are self-driving, then they'll be even safer because we're not going to have this mishmash of some humans driving cars that are fallible and then the automated cars, which are way safer.
Yes, because if people are still on the road driving, automated cars can't necessarily keep up with someone making a mistake in a split second.
Right, because we would eliminate drunk drivers.
Yep.
Right? Because a drunk driver could get in a car and T-bone an automated vehicle and kill that person.
Exactly.
And it's not the automated car. The automated car didn't make any mistake.
No. No, exactly. And because that person drives right into the side of the car, the automated car can't compensate for that.
Yeah.
It doesn't have the ability to suddenly know that, hey, there's a car coming right at the side.
Happening too fast. Yeah. I mean, it's physics, right?
A computer can react much faster than a human, but even the computer can't compensate for basic physics. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if that car is going at a certain speed and there's no way the car can avoid it, there's nothing it can do.
We could always build jets into the bottom of the car, so it could just take off.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally.
Then we don't need roads.
But yeah, that's the whole point. In order for this to be 100% safe, it has to be absolute. Every car has to be self-driving, or we will continue to see accidents.
Yeah, but how long is that going to take? 10, 20 years? Probably 20 years.
It's ultimately going to depend on governments to kind of be forward thinking on this issue. Various states have already implemented rules for self-driving cars.
But there are car enthusiasts, myself included, that I would not want to give up the ability to drive a vehicle.
No, and I'm sure there are people who will be holdouts, but ultimately, this is better for everyone.
But maybe what they just do is, because I can't see the government putting their fist down saying, no human beings are allowed to drive. I mean, maybe some distant future that will not happen in my lifetime.
Oh, it will.
But I think,
believe me, it will.
Okay.
Thanks,
Mr. Trump.
Within probably 30 to 40 years, self-driving will be 100%.
A lot can happen in 30 years.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way. But I think, what I could definitely see happening is that a majority of people are using automated cars, and for the people that still want to drive a car, maybe there'll be some astronomical like insurance tax or something, like where it's so expensive they put this deterrent, like you know how we have carbon taxes, but something like way more high than that.
Oh yeah.
Some crazy penalty for getting in, because now say we get to the point where 90% of the population is autumn, or say even 95%, so there's 5% left that insist on driving a vehicle, but now the government's going to step and say, okay, you 5% are now increasing the risk of accident and the risk of killing someone, so now we're going to tax you, like, I don't know, 50% or something like that.
Yeah.
Some crazy tax.
I could see that happening. I could totally see that happening. Because, yeah, if anyone wants to drive manually, you compromise the entire system. Because the thing is, if everything's 100% automated, you can then optimize around that.
Mm-hmm.
Cars can go much faster. You can set up more efficient routes for everything. Traffic can be reorganized automatically. Cars can go different routes depending on traffic and congestion.
Sure.
Like, you can completely optimize the traffic grid to make sure that people get where they're going as quickly as possible.
That's a massive infrastructure change.
It's huge.
Like,
it's huge.
Across the country, everything has to change.
Yeah.
Not just the cars, the roads, everything.
Yeah, the roads, the traffic signals.
Can we make cars that go sideways?
It should be theoretically possible.
I really want that, because that should be able to get people out of a jam. Sometimes
theory,
there are moments where I've been at a traffic jam. Like, if I could only go sideways, I could get out of this.
Yeah. The only problem would be that a steering wheel isn't really the optimal input for driving sideways.
Well, you wouldn't need a steering wheel on an automated car.
Well, yeah. On an automated car, no, you wouldn't. It would be kind of like those cars in Minority Report, the ones that go up the walls and sideways across lanes and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They had like kind of ball bearing wheels that were on the bottom of the car. But yeah.
Hmm.
It's possible.
Fascinating. It's exciting to think about that, to think about that future, because we would be better off with automated cars.
Yeah,
that is a fact. Yeah, once that technology, like,
somebody had a really good tweet about it. It was like an old man addressing his grandson about it or something, and it went, "You mean people used to drive their own cars? Yeah. Didn't a lot of people die? Yes, millions died."
It seems crazy when you think about it that way.
Yeah.
But that's the reality we live in.
That is the reality. Several million people die every year from a car-related accident.
Because it's usually someone makes a bad decision.
Yep.
Whether it's speeding, whether it's not shoulder checking, whether it's, you know, trying to run a red light or a yellow light because they think they can make it.
Or drinking a little too much.
I mean, yeah, you're right. Absolutely. Wow. You really, sometimes there's certain things, you know, you never stop to really think about. Clearly, but that's kind of freaky when you think about it. Yeah, millions of people died, and that was the norm, and we accepted that.
Yeah.
It's crazy when you think about it.
It's just like guns. It's like we accept all of these deaths as a result of the freedom of having X.
Yeah. Well, in Canada, but in America.
I mean, we don't, but yeah, like it's the same thing. It's like we value the freedom of being able to drive a car so much that we are willing to let millions of people die every year to satisfy that freedom. It's unacceptable, in my opinion.
And yet, there are people that...
And it can't be allowed to continue, especially not when we have the technology to prevent it. So, I mean, I hate to sound harsh, but this is going to happen whether you like it or not, people. It has to.
And well, I think for the greater good.
For the greater good. for the greater good.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, people will go kicking and screaming, but you know what? To move into this next phase of humanity, like we need to.
It's something we just have to do. We have to do that. We have to move to renewable power. We have to do a whole bunch of things that are not going to be easy, but we have to do them.
Yeah, and the fossil fuel companies, I mean, the whole fossil fuel issue too is, it's interesting because like there are the fossil fuel companies that are investing in renewable energy and all these alternative resources, they could, because they have to, because they know they're not going to have a business at some point.
Yeah,
it's inevitable.
Exactly.
It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when.
Yeah, peak oil is coming. Like, I mean, projections, who even knows what the real projections are at this point. Like, they try to claim that, oh yeah, we're fine, we're not going to run out of oil.
No, well, they have estimates when the fossil fuels will be.
But those estimates change all the time.
Sure.
Like, it basically could happen at any point in the next 50 years.
That's not a lot of time.
No.
That's not a lot of time.
Like, and it's exacerbated by the fact that demand for oil increases year over year. So we're pumping more and more oil out of the ground. And lately, it's like they pump out oil out of the ground and people don't even need it. And it floods the market and the prices go down. And so they pump more.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, speaking of oil, by the way, I could have sworn I saw the price of gas at $1.99. Did you see that?
No.
I'm like, there. That must be a mistake because it was at $1.14 a couple days ago. I could not believe that it went to $1.99. It must have been a mistake unless something catastrophic happened in the oil industry.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know. But, yeah, I don't know. It's... There's a lot of things that just need to happen, but it's also difficult because there's so many forces aligned against it, and then there's other issues involved in making them happen. Like, I mean, with the self-driving stuff, yeah, there's going to be lots of taxi drivers and other people out of a job, but no more so than other industries. Like, we're on the verge of having self-driving trucks that carry cargo cross country by themselves. And so that'll kill jobs for all those truck drivers out there who work impossibly long hours to get things to where they need to go.
Well, famously with the assembly line, we weren't afraid of automating a lot of the work on the assembly line. And look at it today. Yes, people lost jobs, but the industry is better for it. They're more efficient.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's
should
what...
Should we not push forward?
Of course we should.
Like, because...
The problem is, pushing forward has now become so rapid, so exponential, that we are on the verge of being able to slash a significant part of the job market within the span of a few years.
Here's my big concern, which I think this is why I'm so concerned about this, and it won't really affect me. But for the people that have those jobs, what I'm not seeing happening is, and what I do want to see happen, is some kind of government retraining program for these people. When these huge shifts happen in these industries to go from, you know, human beings to automation, we need to be able to retrain these people for new skills in new areas so that they can do these, so that they can have a job and stay up to date on technology, right? Because, I mean, what job can you do these days where you don't need some level of basic computer skills? You have to. And so it drives me nuts that we don't have these kind of government-run retraining programs. We should be implementing stuff like that.
Like, the problem is, a lot of people are seeing the writing on the wall. A lot of reports are saying this is going to happen, but governments are being way too slow to react to it. Like, we are on the verge of losing 40% of the job market to automation within a year or two.
That's going to kill the economy.
Yeah. yeah, it's coming and nobody seems to be doing anything
it's
about
like,
it.
Great. So we can like and make all these things much more efficiently and faster. But if we lose all these jobs, no one's going to be able to make money to buy them.
Yeah, it's well, I mean, those people won't be able to. But
there will always be people around with money, of course, yeah, but still, I mean, that 40% is catastrophic.
Obviously, it's not all the jobs, but yeah, it's a lot of the jobs, and yeah, the economy will go down as a result of it. So yeah, this needs to be addressed before it happens. Systems and programs need to be set up ahead of time so that we're not caught by surprise when it does happen. But yeah, governments don't seem to really be moving on it very quickly. Like, one of the possible solutions is a basic income. But in terms of that, there's only very few pilot programs in various countries around the world.
That's something I would really like to read up more on, because I don't know a lot about it. But like, do you know how that works? Like, how would you make that work?
Everybody,
someone has to pay for it.
Everybody gets income, period.
So do we just, we start taxing people more and that money goes into some kind of fund that will support people with a basic income? Like, I don't really get how that works on a large scale.
It's basically a simpler version of welfare, where instead of having all of that ridiculous infrastructure, they sweep that all away. And as a result of saving all that money, they can just give people a basic income no matter what. But I think what it is that they take it away if you get an actual job.
Well, of course, but to me, and I want to clearly define this too, is do you define basic income as a livable income? Like, can I pay my rent? Can I buy food and live? Because
it's based on the level of inflation. So it's a livable income.
Right. So that sounds very expensive to do.
Obviously, it won't be enough for luxuries. Like, it'll be just enough that you can live somewhere, that you can have food and water and utilities, and that's about it. So, I mean, you can live that way, sure. You can totally do that. But if you want more, then you are going to have to actually get a job. So in that way, it creates a safety net for people where...
So does that get rid of homelessness?
It would, probably, yes. Because everyone would make a basic income.
Right, so they could rent a place.
Yep.
And have food and be able to live at a very meager but basic level of, you know.
I mean, it might be more difficult here because of the housing prices.
Well,
but
that's another issue that could be solved with affordable housing, which I think they've tried to do a little bit of that, but...
They need to
not much.
Go further.
They need to go bit on a big scale.
But yeah, like, this is completely doable. They've already shown that it works in multiple pilot programs around the world. We even had one here in Canada a little while ago.
See, it almost feels like a Star Trek feature to me. Like,
it
although the money still, we still have this monetary existence, the fact that we, like, that's an astronomical historic change. The fact that we can eradicate homelessness by providing a basic living to every human being.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It would be a huge shift in social policy for sure. But yeah, governments need to get on this now because the job reaper is coming and its name is automation. So yeah, I mean, because, yeah, the thing is, corporations are not going to stop because someone's saying, oh, no, you're going to kill all the jobs.
No, of course
they
not.
Don't care.
No.
They're just going to do it. And then the government will be left to pick up the pieces afterwards. Like McDonald's, they will automate their checkouts. You will interact with a touchscreen computer to get your cheeseburger.
Would you like fries with that?
You joke, but yeah, pretty much. I mean, all of this technology exists. Like, that's the scary thing. A lot of these automation things could happen yesterday if the companies wanted to start implementing it now. That's the really scary part. Like, this could start happening any minute. Uber, for example, they are beginning to deploy self-driving cars. They are already starting to do that. So pretty soon, there won't be any more Uber drivers. And then after that, there might not be any taxi drivers. And after that, there might not be any Amazon warehouse employees because it's all being done by drones. Like,
I think we need to have a basic income implemented because that's a lot of jobs that are just completely eliminated.
So, I mean, factory workers, warehouse workers, with advances in automation for advanced farming vehicles, no more farm hands. Like,
there are people that like those types of labor jobs, but there are plenty that would rather not. So to automate those, automate like labor, strenuous labor jobs, it makes sense.
Yeah, like obviously like,
human being wants to be in a ditch.
The small town farm obviously wouldn't be able to afford stuff like this, but the bigger companies that have massive farms, they will. And that's a lot more jobs. So the thing is, it's going to be very fragmented. Like there will still be places that don't have automation and can still have jobs. But the bulk of it is these larger companies that employ thousands of people. And when they automate, it's a big deal.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're probably going to see this play out over the next few years. Like, we'll see, oh, this company's automating this thing, this many jobs lost. This company's automating this thing, this many jobs lost. And it'll just continue like that piecemeal for like 5 or 10 years. And if there's nothing in place, suddenly there's going to be this large segment of the population that can't find work because everything's automated and they don't know how to do anything else. So, yeah, like on the one hand, it's going to lead to a more efficient future for all of us. We can produce things cheaply and overall the economy is going to be better because everybody can afford stuff suddenly and it'll be easier to get around and just like a ton of improvements all over the board. But then on the other hand, if everyone loses their jobs, nobody's going to be able to access any of those things. So, yeah, the TLDR of all this is something needs to be done now before it's too late.
Get on it, Canada. And the rest of the world.
Yeah. I think the primary places where this will start happening are North America, Europe. In fact, Europe, they moved, I forget which company, it was Adidas or something. They moved production of a particular product line back to Germany from China. But the catch is the factory making those products entirely automated with 3D printing.
You're making that up.
No, I'm not.
That sounds impossible.
So, made in Germany.
I know 3D printing exists, but so there's actually somebody that's doing this.
Yeah. Wow. So, I mean, it's already starting. That's the thing. It's already here. It's just going to be very badly distributed. It's like that William Gibson quote, "The future is already here. It's just poorly distributed." It's the same thing with this automation stuff. The technology is already here. It's just going to be up to these companies to finally throw the switch.
Our automated overlords have arrived.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's already starting. That first switch has been thrown, and more switches will continue to be thrown until we have a real problem.
You've been listening to The Impromptu. I'm here with Michael Norton, as always. If you'd like to show your support for this podcast and our lovely podcast network, please go to patreon.com/hologramradio and become a regular donator like all of the other lovely people who have done so. It is the single best way to support us. I believe there is an option for a one-time donation, but an ongoing donation would be sincerely appreciated. Because what we do here is really fun, but costs real money, surprisingly. You can subscribe to the podcast in iTunes to ensure you get every new episode each and every week, or of course your favorite podcast player of choice, whatever you prefer. We would appreciate a review if you could do that in iTunes. Please take a moment. We will give you a personal shout out on a future episode of this podcast. You can follow the podcast on Twitter. It is at The Impromptu. Michael Norn is at Zen Impulse, and I'm Alex Knight on Twitter as well under at Zero Distraction. We're on Facebook, Instagram, pretty much everywhere. Send us an email if you'd like to send some feedback. Is there something that's been bugging you or you got something good to say? Send that to theimpromptu@hologramradio.org.
And on that note, thanks for listening, everyone. See you next time.